This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest match report. I'm Chris Hambling and with me today, hi Cara.
Hello. What did I miss? I lost
enthusiasm during the course of that introduction. It's difficult, isn't it?
How long was that? Was that 10 seconds and it's gone?
Yeah. I think I got to the words match report and then I just didn't want to do it anymore.
I think it sounded like it started at Back of the Nest. Oh, I'm here again.
Oh. Yeah, this again. It's been like, 12, 13 years of doing this, but there you go. But look, it was, obviously we're here to talk about the fact that Palace battled to a 2-1 defeat against Luton at is it still Kenilworth Road? I think it is, isn't it? That's what it's called.
Yeah. I was firstly going to pick up on whether or not we battled, but we'll get to that, I guess.
That's a good point. I know a lot of people were looking forward to this away trip. You know, a lot of people's first time going to Luton's ground. It's one of those amazing old school stadiums stuck in the middle of a bunch of houses that just looks ridiculous when you go. It's just a sight to behold. But I think a lot of people probably had a better day in mind when they set off in the morning. But we weren't treated to such, were we? So
no, but you know, to try and start off positively, we have done our bit to try and make sure that anyone who didn't get tickets to go to this game, we've done our bit to keep Luton in the league so that they get another shot next season.
Or we go down with them. That's the other option, isn't it? So, you know, so you get another go. Oh dear. Anyway, before we get too heavily into the depressing stuff, and this will not be a long podcast because who wants to sort of go into the detail on this game? I don't think anybody, certainly not the Palace players, come Monday morning when they have to review the match video. I think that there might be a few people calling in sick for that one. What we've been up to, anything exciting away from football?
God, have I? Sorry, I was so...
Any more singing lessons?
I haven't been here for a few weeks. Obviously, I popped back to England for a few weekends, one of which was my sister and brother-in-law's joint 40th. So they have the misfortune of their birthdays being the 23rd and the 24th of December, so they can never actually celebrate their birthdays when it is. So they had a big party, did some singing for them, which was nice. Made my niece cry, and like she's only four, and so she couldn't express whether she was crying because she liked it or because she was crying because she didn't like it. So that's the only review that I got from
that's
a bit of a tough one.
I mean, that is tough, isn't it? Yeah, tears can be good, maybe she enjoyed the singing but was just traumatized that it came from you.
That was my older nephew who was just really embarrassed and like kind of liked it, but also had some of his friends there, and so he couldn't like say that he liked it, so he just refused to speak to me for the rest of the night, which I am taking as a compliment.
Yeah.
Because I think they all just would have bullied me, so I think it went well.
That's good news, so I'm glad you had something positive. That's nice.
Thank you. How about you?
Yeah, it's just been quite cold, hasn't it? That's all I've really got to say the last week or so. I'm trying to think if I've done anything exciting at all. I did my Good Samaritan bit today. I was walking the dog and walking through the forest and just heard some quite loud crying.
I was like, oh my God.
I don't know what that is. So as I got closer, basically this relatively young girl just sort of emerged from somewhere in the forest crying her eyes out.
Oh my God, what the hell?
And I was like, oh, okay. She got closer. I realized, she probably had Down syndrome, something along those lines. And she was really very sad. She said, I've lost my mum. I don't know where I am or what I'm doing. And I was like, oh, okay. I said, well, where have you come from? And she said, oh, I just came from over there. I was like, okay. Where was your mum with you? She said, yeah, but she's gone. I was like, okay. Do you know which direction she went? She went, I think she went that way. And I said, well, I'm walking the dog that way. So, you know, walk with me and we'll see if we can go find her. So then I spent a good half an hour sort of walking around with her, trying to manage the fact that she didn't understand she couldn't pet my dog, who is people reactive.
Right.
And that was quite a fun thing to manage. But a sort of combination of good things happened. And first of all, I think probably the third or fourth time since having our rescue dog, she was able to kind of realize that this person was not neuronormative and was trying to interact with her. And she just went over and sat down next to her and let her pet her, which was really sweet and warmed the heart. Yeah, amazing. She was such a good girl. Yeah. And then I kind of eventually, after some difficult conversations where this girl wanted to know why I didn't have her mum's phone number. And my instincts for comedy, I had to sort of suppress those slightly and just say, well, I'm not sure I've ever met your mum. So I managed to eventually talk her into telling me what, you know, that she did actually live nearby, because she was just literally following me around. And I was saying, do you live down here? She said, no, I can't go out to the road. I'm like, so logic says you can't go out to any of the roads. You must live very near where I originally found you. So I kind of circled back to there and then saw this woman looking around frantically. I was like, is that your mum over there? Oh, yeah, that's my mum. Like, God for that. Thank God. I managed to navigate all of that. The dog didn't bite her.
Winners all round.
Yeah, winners all round. Actually did a longer dog walk than normal. And so that all worked really well. So I feel like I achieved something today, which is more than you can say for Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace.
Yes, I think it is. And you also sounds like narrowly avoided being the subject of a Netflix documentary with that happy ending. So that's good.
Exactly. That could have gone very wrong, couldn't it? And I have watched too much true crime the whole time I'm thinking, I need to actually make sure I get her to her mum, because if something goes wrong somewhere, you know, I'm going to be the suspect.
Between now and then.
I'm not very good at sort of, first of all, I'm not good with children. I don't understand them. Second of all, I'm not particularly great with people in general. I'm just very, very awkward, especially with new people. I have no idea how to talk to humans. So I feel like I excelled myself by channeling a normal person.
You and the dog won your best kind of overcoming challenges behavior and absolutely smashed it. So what a day.
Absolutely. And it means I don't need to do anything else good for the rest of 2023. That's it. It's done now.
That's definitely the way it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Should we have a quick chat about what other parts of Palace got on with? Because there was some good news. So the under 21s, Roy called them the under 23s the other day. A couple of seasons out there, Roy, just to point that out. But to be fair, I've probably done it at least twice this season as well. So anyway, the under 21s were playing in the Premier League Cup, played Birmingham. And won 4-1. Jack Wells Morrison, Adebomi, with two goals. There's rich vein of form. And David Ozo got his second goal in as many weeks as well, after not scoring any until last week. So made it, it was 4-1. someone called Williams for Birmingham scored a goal. Don't care. Don't play for Palace. Don't care. You are. But yeah, really, really strong performance again. And, you know, a lot of changes for Palace come almost every week by week. There's quite significant changes. You're getting obviously members of the first team squad getting minutes here, there and everywhere. So I think it was five changes from the previous game, but still the performances are really consistent and really, you know, high quality every week at the moment. So I think it's 12 goals for the season for Adebome, which has been, you know, really, really good for him. He's coming on extremely well, spending a lot of time with the first team in terms of training. So very high hopes for him. I thought for a couple of years he's got a really good chance. And when you see some of the efforts up front for Palace, you start thinking, well, we could do a lot worse than sticking him on the pitch. Obviously, Roy won't, but you could probably do a lot worse.
They must
but yeah, fantastic.
They have to do, mustn't they? Like, they go out there, they put on really good performance every week, and then they must watch Palace on the senior team on a Saturday or Sunday and think, seriously? Are you seriously saying that I'm not as good as that?
Yeah, I could literally come off the bench and run around exactly like Mateta did, and achieve exactly what he did. So what's the problem? But there you go. I don't be too harsh on Mateta, to be fair. He doesn't get enough consistent minutes, really, but which is make another hard part of playing the same team every week, really. But anyway, there was also a pretty incredible game for the under-18s, winning 5-4 against Fulham. Were 2-0 up at one stage, then went 4-2 down before three goals, including one right towards the end of the game in injury time from George King, I think it was, in the fourth minute of stoppage time there to win 5-4. But, you know, one of the big headlines from that was captain Zach Marsh, who's obviously got a couple of goals for the England under-18s, I think it was, in his first appearance for them this season as well. He scored another hat-trick. That's five hat-tricks under-18 level this season. Absolutely incredible. I think that must be, or when I say 17 goals for the season.
That is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think 12 games, 17 goals. So really must be pushing to get into the 21s group at the very least before the end of the season. There was another goal for Jesse Derry, or Terry Derry, as we like to call him. And as I mentioned, there was the winner was from George King. So fantastic performance. I mean, I've seen some of the. Well, I've seen all the goals on the Crystal Palace FC Academy. I'm still going to say Twitter because I can't be bothered to work out how to. I mean, it's X, but who cares? Like, the goals are on there as well, but it's the celebrations when George King scores the winner. They're an absolute joy to behold. There's nothing quite like a last minute winner. So if you're craving a bit of, you know, excitement from Palace, you could do a lot worse than find that and watch that, because. Yeah, it makes you feel good about the club for just that brief period of time before you have to settle down and remember we just lost to Luton. Also CPFC Women played on Wednesday against Watford in the Cup. I think you have that article available.
That Cara? Is right. I do, yes. Moved to the top of Group C in that competition, which is great. So three goals, as you say, all coming in the second half from Riley Dennis and Hughes. Does sound like it was a bit of a mental match. Watford had 12 shots, two of them on target, and scored none. I have not watched any of their other games, so I don't know if that is kind of consistent with troubles they are currently having or not, but who cares, because we won, we score three, we get to the top of the group, and it's some good news for Palace, and I think probably a good time for it to come off the back of that defeat against Southampton when we played them at Selhurst Park. Was that last weekend? I've lost track of all dates. I think it was last weekend. Six changes Kaminsky made to the team. So obviously paying off and just getting the team just back to their winning ways ahead of going back into the league in their next game. So definitely some positives to be taken from there. And also, I guess, positives to be taken from having enough strength in depth to make those six changes and have such a convincing result. So things continue to look good on the women's side of the club. Long may that continue.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously, yeah, you mentioned about Watford. They're having a whole bunch of shots, only two on target, and not scoring any goals. I mean, you know, Palace had 16 shots, eight on target against Luton, and only scored one goal, which was an absolute wonder goal. Came out of pretty much nowhere from Michael Olise. Certainly wasn't a tactical decision to, you know, earn that goal. So, you know, it doesn't really mean anything if you're not creating proper opportunities, you're not putting them away, and you're not, you know, you're not more consistent and more, and have more quality with your 61% possession, which is, again, what Palace had in that game. Just making a point there.
I was just wondering if you've run out of steam avoiding the inevitable of talking about the Luton game. Do we just need to go on to it?
I think, look, let's just cover a few things. I mean, obviously, like, in terms of any positivity you can take out of it, the goal from Michael Olise is outstanding. I mean, picking the ball up on the halfway line, the kind of the skill, the sort of the turn straight off is fantastic. The skill and the power and the pace is immense. And, you know, it's a very Zaha goal. You know, he didn't do that. I'm not saying he did that tremendously often, but he did it regularly, especially when he got a little bit frustrated or annoyed. You know, he would do things like that, and the cut in and the firing across the keeper into the far corner, and that's amazing to see. But it's kind of bittersweet, not just because we lost the game, because a goal like that deserved a lot more, but it kind of just goes back to that, the kind of ringing in my ears of the idea that we're just here to turn up, play in a shape, stop the opposition playing, and then wait for our better players to do something like that. And that just feels like what Palace are right now. And that, to me, is very it's the negative side of an amazing goal. It's almost feeding into the idea that starting a game against Luton with absolutely no urgency and just letting the first half completely pass us by. Again, I mean, how many times this season has a first half of football completely passed us by? It's the vast majority. And then we just feel like, just try to step on the gas a little bit. But if we're away from home, don't do too much. If we're at home, don't do too much. And if we concede a goal, then try. And you're just like, well, you know, we don't have to wait to concede a goal to then attack. We can attack first, and then we might win more games. And, you know, that's the problem with seeing a goal like this become absolutely meaningless.
Bittersweet, I think, is the absolutely perfect way to describe it. And it's exactly how I felt when Luton's second goal went in, not even waiting to the final whistle, because it is reminiscent of that Wolf mentality that is amazing to have. And we want that. We want, like, the reaction when our players are, like, rightfully a bit pissed off or whatever, is just to grab the ball and be like, if it kills me, this is going in the back of the net, or it's at least getting close, you know. And we really saw that from Olise. We know that he has that in him anyway. Like, I probably mentioned it far too much since it happened, but, you know, we saw that kind of coming of age game for him was against Millwall, when he was getting like absolute abuse, whatever, and his reaction to it, rather than to shy away from it. And we'd seen him be a bit shy in the kind of games that he played up until that point, and he's not been the same player since. You know, he just rose to the occasion and really proved a point. And he has that in him, but we rode off that with Wilf for so long. And I kind of got to the end of the game yesterday and thought, oh God, is that where we're at now? Is it, are we just seeing, like, Parrish and Roy, because I mean, God knows when there's going to be a time when Roy Hodgson isn't our manager, just being like, it's fine, because, like, at least they will just pull something out of the bag. And we just, do we want another generation of being that team, you know, where it's like, just, it's all, but it's also harsh on Olise and, you know, other creative players that we have, because they are celebrated, the fans love them, and it's a great club to be at, but they're not then supported with the football around them to allow them to play their best football. Like, it, moments of brilliance like that, great, but, like, also create a team around them that allows them to play really kind of, football that's really rewarding for them to play as well, not just those odd moments of brilliance where they've got to pull something out of the bag, you know?
Yeah, of course. And look, it's the biggest problem we have right now. We saw Roy come in for 10 games and just free people from the pressure that they'd been playing under, right? Things had gone wrong under Vieira and we were just waiting for him to fix it, and we just didn't know if he would. You know, the club made the decision they made. Roy came in with Ray and they just gave Elise and Eze the freedom to go and play football, and everybody else relaxed kind of as a result of that. We still obviously had Wilf, who was still, you know, hugely influential in games and taking up a lot of time from of opposition defenders. So we were a really dangerous team when we were allowed to just go out and relax and play football. And that kind of short-term boost that Roy gave was absolutely fantastic. Far better than I thought it was going to be. It you know, it had me dreaming that this season would be different. But in my heart, I knew it wouldn't be. You know, I knew this season was going to be like this, but it doesn't make it any easier to handle. And when you look at the lineup we started with, it's Roy had basically the right to pick his strongest team for the first time in a long time. Now, he chose to drop Jordan Ayew and play Jeffrey Schlupp in that team, which I don't understand at all. There's nothing that's pointed to that being appropriate, other than perhaps if Schlupp is giving Mitchell cover on the left side, which he does 6 out of 10 times he's supposed to, I suppose, in a game. Like, he will go and double up and give Mitchell a bit of cover, which is at times needed if we're targeted that side. That's the only reason to pick Jeffrey Schlupp over Jordan Ayew in my view, that I can possibly think of.
And even then, are you needed to do that against Luton?
Yeah, but you're exactly right. It's exactly where my rant is going. Like, but it's Luton. Go and pick your best attacking lineup. Like, if you're going to play Mateta and Edouard together, this is the game to do it, right? Because you know what they're going to do. They're going to try and outwork us. And they did. They outworked us. Their intensity was so much better than ours. We were the better side. We had more of the ball. We had more shots, created more opportunities. We were the better side in that respect. But in terms of when you watch the game, you watch the flow of the game, at no point did I look at it and think, we are going to be clear and deserve winners here. Because we just didn't have enough urgency. We didn't want to score enough. We didn't, the first half just was absolutely diabolical. There was nothing in it in terms of our desire. And I don't know about you, as a Palace fan, I've kind of accepted at times that we're going to be a team that doesn't necessarily make good on the talent that we have. But I've never thought that as a team we would be a team that lacked any fight. I've seen many, many times in the past us pick functional players over talent because we need the fight, because we need the intensity, because we need to play at a high tempo. And that's always been frustrating. But now we're not even doing that. The kind of basics that I expect from a Crystal Palace team are completely absent. And I cannot take much more of Palace starting games at a pedestrian pace and just not looking like they have any interest in winning a football match in the first 45 minutes.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I just wonder if it does point towards a kind of more club-wide thing of, like, what is our identity? What are we working towards? What are our markers of, like, oh, that's a successful league for Crystal Palace? Like, nobody knows. Because for some people, it would be another year in the Premier League, that's it. But it's like, okay, we are 10 years on from that, from, like, reaching the Premier League. When can we just get to a point where we think we have a right to just expect that we're not going to get relegated? And if we're at that point, which I think we should be at that point by now, and for me, we are at that point where we can kind of, at a very base level, just expect that we have a season where we're not in a relegation battle, then what is our ambition? Because every time we speak about that, then we have another section of the fans going, like, don't want for too much, or always comments about, like, being like Charlton or whatever. That made me laugh, mm-hmm. by the way, quick segue, mm-hmm. about saying, you know, Charlton fans were to blame. And it reminds me of that, of them saying, like, seventh place wasn't good enough.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'll tell you what, get us to seventh place and then we'll see. We'll worry about people moaning about just being in seventh place then, but we're nowhere near seventh place yet. No. Anyway, pulling it back to the original point that I wanted to make is I think we're seeing now it's seeping through to the team, because under Vieira, yes, it ended with issues, absolutely. But we did have a chunk of time where we had an identity, we had ambition, we played with ambition. And so those games that were going wrong, it was really noticeable that that had dropped and that there were problems. Don't get me wrong, that's undeniable. And then for that bit that you spoke about where Roy came in, it was like we still retained all the positives of Vieira with the pressure off, exactly like you say. But now that's gone. So what we're left with is none of the positives of Vieira, none of the identity, none of the ambition. I don't know if anybody knows what we are as a club, who we are as a club, and certainly what we are as a team. And that's what's coming through.
Yeah, and I think to that end, we start thinking about who we are and what we are and all those kinds of questions. They're hard questions to answer. And, you know, I always say in any football match, you have to remember that there is an opponent, and you have to remember that they have, you know, in that match, they have the same attitude that you have, as in there's 3 points on offer and it might be hard, but they're going to try and find a way to get those 3 points. So you have to allow for bad performances and you have to allow for aberrations of results and things like that. But this has been coming. This is not a surprise. You know, we got smashed by Everton, really. Like, you know, my brain isn't really working in terms of, we've had a run of poor results. Let's face it. We've won, what, one in five?
I think one in six.
I'm right in saying one in six.
Yes, we were 0-0 at Forest. We lost to Newcastle, lost to Spurs, beat Burnley, lost to Everton, lost to Luton.
There you go. So basically, in a run of fixtures, where you'd expect to be picking up the majority of points. You know, we beat Man United at Old Trafford, like, not that long ago. And everyone was absolutely jubilant about that and absolutely right to be so. But you, in the course of a season, if you just look at those two games and you go, you've beaten Man United, but you lost to Luton, you'd have expected those results to go the other way, so it's evened itself out. Fine. But that's not how reality works, right? Reality works is that a manager like Roy Hodgson, and we are told is a specialist at getting results from the games with the teams in and around you. He'll beat the teams in and around him, and he'll get results, one or two results here and there, against the bigger boys that you don't expect to get. And that's his whole thing. But he's not getting that now. Yeah. You know, we're playing the teams in and around us, and we're not even playing well enough to get a result, let alone looking like getting a result. You know, beating Burnley, you know, who hasn't beaten Burnley this year? It's you know, nothing to really scream about. And when you think about how many wins we've had this season, I mean, 6 of our 15 points is Burnley and Sheffield United. You know, that's fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. You still have to go and win those games. I'm just saying it's not 15 points after 13 games isn't great. You know, Everton don't have their 10 points deducted. Things look more concerning than they are right now. You know, we go, but you know, dragging it back to the main point, when you look at what sort of a club we are and what we should be expecting, look at the team we have now. Okay, so I'm all for criticizing a mismatch of ambition, what the board say and what they deliver and things like that, but what they have delivered for Roy Hodgson is a team that he was able to pick Eber Etcheze and Michael Olise in the same team. He's got a centre-back pairing of Anderson and Gabe, one of our best ever, if not best ever, centre-back pairings. Absolutely sensational players, right? You know, Lerma and Doucouré started the game in the centre midfield. Fantastic centre midfield pairing. You know, and we have got you know, goals in terms of Edouard up top, you know, when he's given the right opportunities. We've got exciting young players, if we ever deem to use them. So the squad he has, the team he's able to pick. Excuse me, I need to cough. Excuse me. Right, the squad he has, the team he's able to pick, is not going to get much better, okay? And certainly if you look at what Luton put out, there's not much on there that you'd take. I'd take Ross Barkley just because he's always, just because he always plays well against us, quite frankly. It doesn't matter where he is in his career. He just, as long as we have him, he can't play against us. I'd be happy with that. But I wouldn't take much else. Yeah, you know, we're staring on the back of a defeat when our only real contribution was a wonder goal. Yeah. That is not in any way good enough. So I'm going to talk really good.
So I just wanted to make the point, because I can't remember if I've made this on the podcast or just in general conversation, but I am really worried that we are kind of steaming into a kind of Leicester City territory without having actually won the league in the time that we've been in the Premier League. But anyway, different conversation. Because arguably you could say the same for their team last year. Like, they had the strong individual players, like Madsen, that is showing kind of this season then his quality, and some of the other players that then sold on, and they've been lucky to keep hold of a few to have a good start in the Championship. But that was a club that ran out of steam. Like, it ran out of identity, it ran out of what's next. And I think from, like, people I speak to who are Leicester City fans, they felt like their owners were distracted. They took their eyes off kind of managing the team or the squad, I should say, to how they were performing on the pitch. And therefore, they ended up getting relegated, arguably, when they probably weren't as bad as some of the other options that could have gone down. And my worry is that we're going to do the same thing, because if you're not managing the club in a way that focuses on an ambition, gives people something to kind of fight for and fight towards, then you very quickly just go on that slippery slope. While you've got an Everton team who are out to kind of prove everybody wrong and out against the world, you know, and that with Sean Dyche at the helm, like, I don't know a single person that is saying they think Everton will go down and they've just had 10 points deducted. Like, that's what I mean about that ambition and that mentality. Like, we just don't have any of it. And I don't want us to get a 10-point deduction, don't get me wrong. But, like, there needs to be something that happens that gives this group of players and the club as a whole some kind of hunger to achieve something that isn't just avoiding relegation.
Yeah. But, I mean, my fear is always that if we talk so much, including those at the club right now, talk so much about, well, you know, Roy's a safe pair of hands. Like, it's just about avoiding, you know, you'll avoid relegation with Roy at the helm. And it's just that, as I've said it probably many, many times, it's true as long as it happens. It's one of those weird things where people say it as fact and you're just like, I think, you know, we're very fortunate with the way the league is looking this year. Very fortunate. And I'm still not going to relax. I look at the next, you know, 10 games or whatever, and I think at the end of those 10 games, we'll be, you know, over halfway into the season, won't we? So we'll see where we are then, because it you know, run of fixtures does not look great for us. And, you know, we certainly won't be talking about how far into the top half we'll be finishing, I don't think. And then that in itself, you then have to ask the question, you know, people like Mark Gay and Michael Olise and even Echieze themselves, contracts or no contracts, that they are targets for other clubs, bigger clubs with better resources, who with more ambition. We're going to find it very, very hard to keep them. And then who comes behind them that's going to have the same impact? You know, the opportunity now to progress, it's now, it's right now. This Palace opportunity with this team is right now. It's not next season, it's now. So with that team, with that strength, we are 13th in the league and our trend is downwards and we're hitting a difficult run of fixtures. And in football, the only person responsible, ultimately the one person who holds responsibility for that, is always the manager. And for me, he's got to be at threat of losing that job. He should be at threat of losing that job. He should be reflecting on the run of form, the way the team are playing, and thinking, I'm going to be lucky if I see the season out. Because it's not good enough in any way. And I go to Joel Ward's comments after the game. You know, he's, and I do wonder. I like Joel Ward. I think, you know, the mentality, him as a captain, I think is, you know, he's really strong. And he talked about in the first half, we're not at the level we know we can be. Well, when have you been? Like, yeah. If you say that every game, then you are at the level, because that's your level in the first half of every single football match. You know, the exception to the rule, like for the example of the Man United game, where we had a good opening first 45. I can't think of too many other games this season. Right now, I can't think of any other game this season. I'm probably not right, but I can absolutely guarantee you there's fewer games where we've been good in the first half than bad in the first half. And for that reason, that's a statement of complete and utter obliviousness to the truth. We are a bad team in the first half of football matches. That is our level. That is what we do. And we need to change it. We need to improve. So telling people that, oh, we didn't quite reach the level, you're kidding yourself. And then saying second half, we gave ourselves an uphill battle. Well, that's what happens if you waste the half of a football match. If you don't stamp your authority on a game against Luton Town in the first 45 minutes, you're setting yourself up for defeat. So I agree with that. You know, he talks about being frustrated with the defending, and absolutely right, because that's a cornerstone of what we do. But it wasn't good enough. You know, the winning goal from Luton is just something that doesn't usually happen in the Palace back four, right? You don't usually get Anderson calling for the ball, so Johnston leaves it, then not touching it, so then he blames Johnston for not coming and getting it. That's not something that usually happens. It just shows you things aren't quite, they're not quite together. They're not quite, you know, there's been a knock to the confidence, and that fluidity is gone. And it's a real concern. Other thing, obviously, to talk about is there were two injuries in the game of significance. Eze's got an ankle injury. They're not sure how serious, but hopefully doesn't look too bad. But Cheick Doucouré looks like a really bad injury. You know, immobilised a boot at the end of the game and very, very, very slowly walking. It was a real scream as well. Nobody around him at all. Just something's gone. I hope it's not the Achilles, but that's what it kind of looked like to me. It's something like that. It's either a snap of a muscle or maybe an Achilles snap. So really bad.
It is a huge blow. And it did make me think when both him and Eze went off, back to the comments of the was it the Galatasaray physio or whatever about how Palace manage players kind of health and stuff, and you do just sit there and think, like, that's a worry for us immediately, it's a worry for those players, but it's also a worry about the reputation we have for attracting players to come to us as well, you know, the more this our kind of injury continues. It's a conversation for another day, not necessarily today, but I think immediate worries.
We want to stop this as soon as we can, don't we? So but I will say one thing on that. You make a really interesting point, especially, I know you saw Roy's comments before the game where he talked about whether Elise was fit or whatever, and he said quite, you know, smugly, well, the medical staff say it takes a number of weeks for them to be up to speed, but, you know, from my experience in football, once they're fit to play, you put them in the team and they perform straight away. And it's just like, I feel like these are areas where, you know, our approach is somewhat, we pay people to give proper professional advice, but we have somebody at the helm who knows better. You know,
and when you've got like you said, you've got a fully, like, a bench of people that we should be able to rely on, a bench of players that, like, most of them are, like, probably chomping at the bit to get more minutes, you know, and to, like, solidify their places. Why against Luton are you rushing people back? Just none of it makes sense. A lot of it with Roy, I always, like, his stubbornness. Like, it's because it's the player that he wants on the pitch, and he's not going to be told otherwise. And everything else goes out the window.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's possible. I'm in a position where I like Roy. I do. I promise you I do. And I respect him as a manager, and I respect what he's done. But I don't want him anywhere near Palace anymore. I have to be honest, I don't. I was talking with Patrick about this, and he gets more abuse than I do on the topic. But you're like, I've said, like, I said these words, so send the abuse my way. I can't wait for the myth to be over that Hodgson is absolutely the best that we can hope for in these, like the best manager we can hope for with one of our best Premier League lineups ever is not Roy Hodgson. I'm sorry. It's a really strong squad, really strong. I know we've had injury problems and I am sympathetic to that, but we are so, so negative. We are so negative about the ability we have on the pitch, and it's horrible to watch.
And well, and I think if the truth of it is that Roy is the best we can get, that is a big problem, because what's going on behind the scenes that is putting off the other managers who would love to come and manage Elise, Eze, Gay, Anderson, you know, I mean, there must, on paper, there must be loads that are biting your hand off to be in charge of that team. So what is it that's putting those managers off then, if it really is true that that the best we can do is Roy, Mark, 50 million.
But he's, I mean, after the game, I was like, I've watched his interview and like, I always worry, you know, he starts with like, I'm going to congratulate Luton on their, they worked very hard for their victory. And you're like, yeah, they worked really hard. Why didn't we? And then he talked about being unlucky. And I'm just like, we weren't really unlucky. And I know Edouard had a goal disallowed and it was bad luck. He didn't mean to handball it, but he did. And that probably is a turning point in the game. He talked about their keeper having an outstanding game. Well, he's actually made two really, really good saves, but they weren't saves you wouldn't expect a decent keeper to make. I'd have expected Johnston to have a good crack at those saves. But a lot of the saves he made were because the ball was just too close to him. You know, we weren't getting shots into corner. We weren't making the most of the opportunities we had. But then he started talking about, it's just, we're just going down this road of blaming the players again, which creeps in every now and then. Where it's, so he was talking about Elise being, you know, he should be pleased with his day's work. And he said, unfortunately, we didn't have as many of those type of players as we'd have liked. So, you know, he said, with the players we had on the field, we should be at least capable of coming away with at least a point. You don't say.
Sorry. Well, at least a point against Luton. How are you not going into that game thinking that we have the ability to take all three, and we were the favourites to take all three, and we should have taken all three? So even that annoys me without even getting into what's wrong with that, making that statement after the performance. If you're not going into that game and coming out of it going, yeah, that's a fucking disaster that we, excuse my language, but that's a disaster that we didn't get 3 points from that, like how we ended up in this situation. I actually just want to do the rest of the podcast, however many minutes we're doing this for, I might just sit here and just bang my head on the table, because that's how this club makes me feel at the moment.
Yeah, but absolutely right, it does. Yeah, it's really odd, you know. And I'm looking through Luton's games at the moment. I'm trying to think, okay, so they beat Everton, right? That was their first win on the 30th of September. They drew with Wolves, okay? All right. Drew with Wolves. Yeah. Just having a quick look through. They drew with Forest.
Pause in there. We beat Wolves, lost to Everton, drew with Forest. So we're not doing that differently so far.
No. They lost to Burnley. They were the recipients of the only win Burnley have had this season. Burnley have won one and drawn one and lost the rest. And that one of the victories was against Luton.
Yeah, yeah.
They did draw against Liverpool, Luton. So they haven't been smashed in many games. Like Villa did a pretty decent job on them. And I think Chelsea and Brighton destroyed them, I think it's fair to say. But other than that, you know, they've been in games, they've been working hard, and they got a decent manager, a former player of ours, you know, Rob Edwards. But I just think it's worth considering. But like, I'll be making excuses if I said that made it okay to lose the game. In terms of points that they've taken, you can be impressed with their draw against Liverpool. But the rest of it, you know, the context is they're a team that lost to Burnley at home.
Yeah.
And that's that context that I want, you know, to consider when we think about the fact that we lost to them.
Yeah.
I think we are out of excuses. we have a game against West Ham and a game against Bournemouth. And I think in both those games, points are incredibly important. You know, we need to address this situation now. I'm telling you now, 0 points out of those two games. I'm not saying it will happen. I'd be absolutely shocked if we don't get anything from those two games. But if we don't, a change has to happen, you know, before Christmas. You know, let's give somebody a few weeks and then the January transfer window and just do something different, because this is fast becoming one of the most underwhelming, underachieving seasons in a long, long time.
Yeah, any other manager would, like, be worried now, but I don't think Roy will be worried. I also don't think he doesn't need to work, does he, for various reasons. So it also worries me that I don't know what that pressure is actually going to do to him, because, I mean, does he care if he's then out of a job?
I think, you know, I think there's a lot of pride there, but I also think that's half the problem. I think you talked about his stubbornness earlier. I think if something's going badly and someone says, hey, you should probably do something a bit different, he's going to be like, absolutely no. I'm digging my heels in. I'm going to do exactly what I've done all the time, because that's what I'm used to doing, and it will get us the results. It will get us the points. But, you know, honestly, and I invite anybody who's thinking you've been overly negative, how dare you question Roy? Anyone who's thinking that right now, do you really want to watch Palace right now? When you think about the next game, do you think, can't wait for that next game? If you filter out going to see your mates, having a beer at the pub or whatever, you know, what used to keep me motivated was a quick visit to Morley's on the way home, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, if you take all of the fun stuff that isn't the football out of it, other than those of you who just literally go for the atmosphere and don't care about the result, do you really want to go and watch Crystal Palace right now?
The atmospheres are going to start to, like, change as well, though, aren't they? Because we know how this goes. Like, I think the fan base is, if it's not already lost, like, it's well on the way. And we know, like, the only thing that is more of an atmosphere than an absolutely, like, on top of the world Sellers Park is a really pissed off Sellers Park. And I think we are quite quickly heading into that type of atmosphere. But I really hope that this maybe is like a kick up the arse, and they come out against West Ham next week and we see a completely different kind of performance. That would be great. And that we can ride off that into Christmas. But indeed.
Well, one thing's for sure. It seems unlikely that if Eze's out, it seems unlikely that Will Hughes will be playing number 10, because he's going to have to cover for Cheick Doucouré. So it'd be interesting to see who's in for Eze if he's not fit for the West Ham game. But yeah, certainly, you know, two big changes there coming, and we'll see how we respond. But look, we'll let Nick and Patrick and Chris talk about that in the week in the preview. So do look out for that. Sure, there'll be plenty more reaction. I know DR's been going absolutely batshit crazy on YouTube, and it's quite entertaining to watch him and the gang. So do head over there as well, like, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. So thank you, Cara, for joining me today. I thank Mikey, but yeah, again, he wasn't available to produce, so I did it myself, but he will edit it later, so thank you for editing it later, Mikey. And thanks to everyone for listening. I really hope we get an opportunity to have a much more upbeat and positive show. And I really wish we could have talked more in a happier way about Michael Olise's goals, which has got to be up there for goal of the season. But until next time, come on, you Palace. See, I didn't even care then. Come on, you Palace.
Come on, you Palace. Come on, you Palace. Yeah, done.
Yeah, go on, something. It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.